So we are at Sedra Shalach Lecha. Right, so we're looking at Sedra Shalach Lecha, which is about the spies. And we know the basic story of the spies and the concept that the mimer, that the discourse, which was said in 1965, the concept that it focuses on is verse 32. Vayotziu dibat haaretz. So when the spies came back, they spoke negatively about the land, asher tahu ota, which they had journeyed through, and they spoke badly about it, El Bnei Yisrael, to the children of Israel, Lemos, saying, Haaretz asher avanu ba, the land which we passed through, Latur ota, viewing it, Eretz ochelet yoshveha hi, it is a land which consumes its inhabitants. So that concept of a land that consumes its inhabitants. Now Rashi explains on that verse that they saw various funerals at the time when they were there. And they thought, what a terrible thing, people keep dying in this land. And Rashi says they didn't realize that God made it happen, that there were these funerals, so people would be preoccupied with the funeral and wouldn't notice the spies. But they took him in the wrong way. However, the discourse looks at it in a completely different way, and so that's what we're going to try to explore together. And in order to help us explore it, we have the melody of the mimer. Oh, ya, 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 ma, ya, 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 yo, ya, 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 ma, bo. Ya, ma, ya, 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 yo, ma, bo. Ha, ya, 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 ma, ha, ya, 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 ma, yo, ma, ho. Right, so here we are, the beginning of the discourse. Lahavin inyan ta'anat hamaraglim. To understand the claim of the spies. Shelo ratzu dikanes le'eretz Yisrael, they didn't want to go into the land of Israel. Va'amru, and they said, shehi eretz ochelet yoshveya, that it's a land which devours its inhabitants. Okay. So the Rebbe says, yesh lahakdim levaya inyan, we first have to consider the idea, what it says in the Zohar, Da'ara itbatlat, the land becomes nullified. Shezeu al derech eretz ochelet yeshveya, which relates to this idea of the land which consumes its inhabitant. The land becomes nullified. Now, what does it mean, the land becomes nullified? Sheyesh bazeh shnei perushim, there are two ways to understand it. Perush HaRishon, the first explanation, which is a highly Kabbalistic concept, Shekasher Malchin Kadmain DeTohu. Now, here we have the idea of the breaking of the vessels. And we have the idea that before, at a kind of pre-stage of existence, there was a world which was called the world of chaos. And in this world of chaos, there were what's called Malchin Kadmayin, the early kings, but it means like divine emanations, like what we later called Sfirot. But this is an early form of these Sfirot, which fell. Naflu Mishvirat HaKelim. They fell in the breaking of the vessels. So, Hinei Svirat HaMalchut, now the Sphira, the attribute, kingship, Ara, which is generally called the land, that's a metaphor for Malchut in many places in the Zohar and elsewhere, that kingship, Malchut, which is the feminine principle, is the land. Rak itbatlat mipu'ulata. It wasn't broken in the same way that the other vessels or svirot were. It only became, as it were, neutralized from the activity that it normally does. It was nullified or neutralized, but it wasn't broken. Avalo nafla b'shvira, but it didn't actually fall in the breaking of the vessel. All right, at this point it sounds very abstract. Let's try to understand it as the discourse explains it, and then we'll understand it more in terms of the way these concepts relate to the individual. Ki hatam lesibat hashvira, because the reason for the breaking of the vessels, humipnei shehaya behem bechinat yeshut, is because of the ego that was within them, the sense of self. Now, you see the difference between the sefirot of the world of chaos and the world which follows it, which is the world of tikkun, is that the sefirot in the world of tikkun, each of them bear within them their opposite. So chesed, kindness, has in it the quality of chesed, of kindness, and also it's got the quality of gvura, of severity. Whereas in the world of chaos, each thing is just whatever it was. If it was kindness, it was just kindness, nothing else. If it was severity, it was severity and nothing else. And so therefore, the way it's presented in Hasidic thought, they couldn't bear each other, they couldn't deal with each other, because each of these sefirot had a different quality, and it didn't relate to any of the other sefirot, and it couldn't connect with any of the other sefirot. And it's a kind of prototype of a certain kind of egotism within the individual, where that person is on a certain track and he cannot tolerate anything which is in any way different. Whereas a more molded and blended kind of person has been through different things and has this quality within them and that quality within them, and when they see something which at one level is confrontational, they think, oh, you know, there's a bit of me in that as well, and so they're able to cope with opposition. Whereas the sefirot of tohu could not, of chaos, could not cope with opposition. But now, the point,
you said chesed has the aspect of gvura in it, but it has all the others as well.
Yeah, all of them.
That's what we count on the omer.
Yes, so that's why chesed, gvura, tiferet, all the sefirot, they interrelate in the world of tikkun. Whereas before the world of tikkun, the world of healing, in the world of chaos, they couldn't relate to each other. They're what's called anfin mitpadin, branches which are separate from each other, and they don't have any connection. Now, the inyan zeh, now all this applies, rak b'sha'ah hamidot, only with the other attributes, v'lo b'vchinat malchut, but not kingship, which is the feminine, she'enu b'vchinat yesh murgash kol kach, because the feminine does not have such a strong ego. V'hainu, that means, she'im heyota b'chinat yesh, even though it has a quality of existing, mikol makom, nonetheless, yesh v'gam b'chinat bitul, it's also got a certain kind of selflessness. V'soveles b'tiva, shnei hafachim alalu yachad, and by nature, it bears within it these two opposites. On the one hand, it's a self, and on the other hand, it's selfless. And those two qualities together. And it's interesting to think about this as a kind of a feminine principle as opposed to the masculine. The masculine sort of is a driving force, whether it's this direction or that direction, whether it's the direction of chesed, of kindness, or it's the direction of severity. Whereas the feminine has within it a kind of a multiplicity, right at the beginning. That's so a friend of mine writing about this in the world of theory, what's called theory in English literature, talks about the male as being either or, whereas the female is both and. So the male can only look at it in one way, whereas the female can look at it in different ways, together, at the same time. And that looking at things in different ways at the same time also relates to the very essence of femininity in Malchut, as described here in this quality of kingship, the feminine, because it's able to bear the sense of self and non-self at the same time. It carries those two qualities at the same time. V'lachein, and therefore, lo haya ba shvira unefila legamrei. Therefore, even from the world, even from the world of chaos, where the Kabbalistic narrative of Rabbi Isaac Luria is about this breaking of the vessels, the attribute of kingship did not have a full breaking. The only way it happened, something happened, and it's what's called that the earth became neutralized. The light spreading out from Malchut, that ceased. But Malchut in itself was not broken. So that's one way of understanding what it means in the Zohar about the land being neutralized. Now all this is going to come back to the story of the spies and going into the land of Israel and not wanting to go into the land of Israel and why they didn't want to go. So it's going to come back to that. But at the moment we're having a lesson in Kabbalah from the Lubavitcher Rebbe in 1965. Upeirush Hasheni, and the second explanation, kamavor b'likutei Torah, as explained in Likutei Torah, a book with teachings of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, be'inyan ha'mesirut nefesh batfilah, concerning the sense of abandon and dedication to the divine beyond everything else in prayer. Until the very nature of the soul of the person, as it were, dissolves away, like a flame rising up by itself, to be absorbed, and to cleave in the divine radiance. So that's also, you see, the self, the soul of the person here, is so much yearning for the divine that it goes beyond everything. Its whole nature is dissolved away. And that's another way of understanding this idea that the land is dissolved away. Right? The land here represents the soul of the person, I think. And it dissolves because of the person's yearning for God, and the soul just reaches out towards God beyond anything else. It's not that the person wants anything. They're not praying for something. They're just dissolving in godliness at this moment. So, having taken this passage from the Zohar, and given these two explanations from it, right? It's all based on this phrase in the Zohar that the land is nullified or neutralized or dissolved. So corresponding to that, in line 21, says the Rebbe, Yesh gam shnei perushim, we can apply these two explanations which we've just had, Be'inyan Eretz Ochelet Yoshvea, concerning the land of Israel being a land which devours its inhabitants. Perush HaRishon, the first explanation, Kedi'ita B'likutei Torah B'Pashoteinu, as we learn in Likutei Torah, speaking about our Sedra Shelach Lecha. Now, he's now giving a Kabbalistic reason why the spies didn't want to go into the land of Israel. Shahaya b'da'atam, it was in their mind, the spies, she'im yi'agilu or ein sof baruchu l'mata, that if the infinite radiance of the infinite was revealed below, it would be revealed below how? Al yedei kiyum mitzvot masiyot, through keeping practical mitzvot. If that would happen, that there would be this revelation of the infinite in the physical world, kumo lemaila, and the revelation would be the same as in upper spiritual realms, yibatlu mimitziyatam legamrei, they would completely be dissolved out of existence. And that is what it means, the land devours its inhabitants. Now, let's step back a bit and try to understand this. In their mind, according to this stream of teachings, one could say, from Rabbi Shneur Zalman, and then expanded and elaborated by his descendants and successors over the generations, the point about the spies is they didn't want to go into the land of Israel because of what would happen in the land of Israel. Now, what he's focusing on here is that in the land of Israel, they would be keeping the practical commandments of the Torah. They would have normal lives. Instead of being in the desert and eating the manna, drinking water from the well of Miriam, hardly having to do anything in order to get their daily food and drink and anything else, and just being sort of in the atmosphere of this sacred sanctuary with the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire, and in a very, very intense spiritual atmosphere, just like that, withdrawn from the world. Instead of that, they would be in the land of Israel. They would be plowing the fields, planting, reaping, they would be completely involved in practical things, and they will be doing a lot of mitzvah, all kinds of mitzvah that relate to ordinary daily life. Now, the spies didn't look, they didn't see the mitzvah as just rituals. They saw the mitzvah as revelations of the infinite. And wow, there's this mitzvah. There's giving charity, let's say, So someone gives some charity. Wow, that's an amazing thing. That's like a great revelation of the Ein Sof. And then they have a home and they put a mezuzah on the door. Wow, that's another great revelation. And then they have tefillin. And a man puts on tefillin, or a boy over 13 puts on tefillin. Wow, what an incredible thing. So according to the spies, we'll just be stoned out of our mind the entire time. There'll be this mitzvah, that mitzvah. We won't be able to take it. You'll just have to carry us away. We don't want to go into the land of Israel. It'll be too much. And that's what it means. The land will devour its inhabitants. It'll just be too much. So that's what it means, the land will devour its inhabitants, line 4, page Vav. Perush, that means, Yoshveha, the inhabitants, Ein tofsim makom la'atzman klal, they won't be significant anymore. Umavatlin atzman, they will simply dissolve away, li'yichudo yitbarech, in the face of the tremendous blessed unity of God, Shebetachtonim, which is in the lower world, Liyot Ein Od, that there should be this divine radiance and nothing else. And in brackets, the Rebbe adds, Shezeu al derech perush hasheni, that's like the second explanation that we had of the words from the Zohar, Ba'ara it Batlat, of the land being the neutralized, Shuhu Inyan Bitul B'Mitziyot, being completely abnegated, right? The second explanation was like in prayer, that the person completely dissolves away in the face of godliness through his or her tremendous dedication to the divine. And so this is what the spies were worried about, that if they go into the land of Israel, that's going to be happening all the time. Mm-hmm. Just simply through the practical mitzvot, which are part of daily life, when you plow the fields and sow them and reap the crops build homes and do ordinary things of ordinary work, all the 613 mitzvot will be operating, and it'll just be a great, great, infinite radiance, and they won't have any existence. They'll just be dissolved away. Uperush Hasheni, and the second explanation, Kamavor b'chama drushim, explained in other places in Hasidic teachings, b'perush eretz ochelet yoshveya, about the land eating up its inhabitants, sh'ta'anatam haita, the claim of the spies was, shayit askut b'gashmiyut, that being involved with physical things, in other words, mitzvot masiyot, practical mitzvot, megashemet, makes a person very physical. Why should I do physical things? I'd rather just be in a complete spiritual realm here in the wilderness. That's absolutely right. That's just the right flavor. Just be able to contemplate the divine, not have to do anything physical. Once you get into a world of physicality and doing practical mitzvot, why on earth should intense spirituality be expressed in practical terms? So, and if I do these practical things, isn't it going to make me coarse and material and physical? I mean, you know, take tefillin for example. So you have to buy tefillin. It's like a physical thing. You have to get money out of the bank and buy. It's a substantial sum of money. Why should I have to think about something holy in material terms? Wouldn't it be more reasonable that, like we are here in the wilderness, that we're just in this ethereal realm? V'lechein lo ratzu likanes la'aretz, and therefore they didn't want to go into the land, kedei la'asok b'beiru advarim agashmiyim, in order to be involved with sifting, by using physical things, elevating the spirituality in those things to God. They didn't want to get into that. Kevin shahayu yireim, because they were frightened. Shema lo zubulvad shelo yale biyadam. Not only won't they able levararam, to sift the physical things around them, el adaraba, but on the contrary, they were worried that the involvement with material things, tazik lehem, will harm them. They will just focus on the material aspect. They'll be dragged down into materialism. And through that, they'll fall from their level. And that's like the first explanation, Ba'ara it batlan, of the words that the land is dissolved away, shekashurim inyan shvirat hakelim d'tor, which is connected with the idea of the breaking of the vessels of the world of chaos, as will be explained. So that they felt that just by being involved with physicality will drag them down in a terrible way. Now let's just stop for a second. It's a very interesting way of looking at the problem the spies had. There are several other approaches in Hasidic teaching as well, but here we have it, that it's the mitzvot and the whole question of our relationship with the mitzvot. One aspect of it is that the mitzvot are so intense spiritually that we'll just be knocked out completely. And the other is that the physical side of the mitzvah will drag us down and will make us more coarse and more materialistic. You know, as if you think, you know, so there's a mitzvah to light candles for Shabbat every Shabbat. So a person starts thinking, well, what kind of candlesticks should I put in the candles? And starts thinking, you know, I could buy a pair of candlesticks for £50. Or I could buy for £500. Or I could buy for £5,000. And just get dragged down into sort of the materiality of the mitzvah. And so that's what they're frightened of. No, no, no. We can't do anything like that. We'll get dragged down into the materiality of the mitzvah. So that's the second thing. And the first is that the very act of lighting candles for Shabbat will be so stunning, I'll be absolutely blown out of my mind. I won't be able to breathe. I'll need to have to call 999. So those are the two reasons. They did not want to move from their state of being in the very spiritual realm in the wilderness into the practicality of the land of Israel. Now, if we consider that all of us, in a sense, go through this process of being in the wilderness and going into the land of Israel, and whether or not we go into, or do we want to go into, we're all, in a sense, faced with this kind of question mark. Are we able to make the step of going into the land? You know, and sometimes there's some step that a person might take, and they're frightened to take it. And it could well be that sometimes, you know, this kind of rationale is at the back of it. Incidentally, another explanation of the spies is on similar lines, but in a rather different way. They will come into the land of Israel, and then they'll be plowing and planting and reaping and so on. They'll forget spirituality. So it's not the mitzvah that will be a problem for them. The ordinary daily life will make them forget the spiritual. And so that's another thing, another way of understanding why the spies didn't want to go into the land of Israel. All these explanations come from Rabbi Schneur Zalman, and then they're elaborated later on.
I learned another one today.
Yes, what's that?
That they felt that the inhabitants of the land were so strong, they said, that, you know, we were like grasshoppers in their eyes, etc. But what they were saying was that we don't really have faith that Hashem can deal with these things that he's created, in effect, because they're so powerful and so strong, and that if we go and live in that land, we will no longer be under the miraculous protection of Hashem, because we'll be doing ordinary things, like you just said, and that maybe he won't then show his miracles, or won't even be able to. And that was another reason why they didn't want to go in, and didn't really have faith that Hashem would actually, you know, deal with anything.
Yeah, well, one way of thinking of that, which might even be here, that the person thinks that we either live in a spiritual realm like the desert and God works miracles for us, or we will be in the practical world and there won't be any miracles and no help from God. So they saw it as an either or. The whole issue is, you could designate this discourse. It's either or both and. and so that's the problem of the spies. Now, section Bet, page 12.
Sorry, in what way is it either or
both? Right, because the either or is that either we will live in spirituality in the desert, or we will go into the land of Israel. That's according to the point your father just made. Or we'll go into the land of Israel, and there we'll be denuded from any kind of spirituality. It'll only be a material environment.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the one of the two ways of looking at it?
Well, here, the way it's looking at it here is all to do with mitzvot. But either the mitzvot are too powerful and will blow us out of our minds, or they will materialize us, because we will be doing practical mitzvot. The mitzvot themselves will drag us down because of them being physical, in the physical world. So it's slightly different. But the both and is the idea that in in fact they can combine both. They can.
And that was still a problem. They were afraid it was still a problem.
Well, combining both means that at every step, it's not too much. It's bearable. You know, the mitzvahs express great radiance, but not too much, and so you're able to take it and live a normal life. Or the mitzvah have a material quality, but that doesn't drag you down into materialism. You know, so it's a kind of a middle path. And that middle path, join, that's what I'm calling both and, that it joins together the two extremes.
Yes, and the spies were afraid of the first option, the binary.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's just that there were several options you gave of different incorrect binaries.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, and I think you could analyze them all in terms of problematic binaries, problematic either or. Yeah. Section back. Ve'inin b'zeh. Now this topic, kamavur b'lekutei Torah reish parshatenu. The subject, as explained in Lekutei Torah at the beginning of the Sedra. B'inyan mahut madregat Eretz Yisrael, to consider the nature of the land of Israel. Dehine kol ha-mitzvot ha-masiyot, in fact, all the practical mitzvot, ruban kechulan, most of them, tluyot dafka be'Eretz Yisrael, they somehow connect with the land of Israel. Ubifchat inyanei zraim, especially all the agricultural laws, the kodoshim, and all the sacrifices. But it's interesting that it lumps together, you know, in a sense that all the mitzvot are somehow linked in with the land of Israel. Umamshech, and Rabbi Shneur Zalman continues, Dehinei ktiv, behold, it's written, Ki lo al halechem levado yichye ha'adam. A person doesn't live just on bread. Ki al kol motza pi Hashem, but a person lives on whatever Hashem says he will live. V'tzarich lahavin ha-yitchon shebelechem. And we have to understand what's special about bread. V'halo gam ha-adam nivra b'mayma. So the bread is created by God saying, you know, let there be this and that, and so everything is created by God, and even a human being, Nivra b'mayma, was created by God saying something. Kamo shekatuv, Nase Adam, as it's written in the Torah, let us make man. V'lama tzarich Adam lekabel chayuto melechem dafka? Why does the person have to get their life force from the bread? So the whole idea is that there are different levels of existence. And so there's the inanimate and the vegetable and the animal and then the human. So the question is, why is it that the human is getting sustenance, as it were, from the vegetable? Why does the human have to be sustained from these sort of lower dimensions of existence? And that's what it asks in the brackets. Eich yesh koach b'maychel, how is there power in this food, lahachayot et ha'adam, to give life to the person, halo lechem u'b'chinat tzomeach, the bread is from the vegetable realm, And the land from which the bread grows, the wheat grows, or barley, or oats, whatever, he b'chinat domem, is the inanimate realm. V'adam u'b'chinat medaber, and the person is on a higher level. After the animals, then comes the speaking level, the human level. V'im kein eich yad samech b'chinat mechayeh. How can it be that the vegetable domain gives life to the human realm, shalamailu mimena harbeh, which is much higher than it? So it's trying to understand, as it were, the whole interrelation within the universe of things devouring each other, the way in which one level is sustained by the energy, the spiritual and physical energy that comes from another level. And so we as human beings, we eat food. And the food that we eat also is a product of various other things which sustain that food and make the food grow. So there's what they call the food chain in physical terms, but there's also a food chain in spiritual terms. Line 5, on page 9. Ach ha'inyan hu, but the subject is, ki motza pi Hashem, the expression of God's mouth, shebedomim tzomeach chai, which are in the three lower levels, inanimate, vegetable, and animal, who in Yan Haresh Pechet Nitzutzin, they are the 288 sparks, which the Kabbalah tells us, Shenaflu b'shvirat hakelim, which fell in the breaking of the vessels. V'adam, where is the person? Hu me'olam ha'tikun, he or she is from the realm of tikun, of healing. V'lachein tzarich ha'adam lekabel chayuto, and therefore the person has to take his life force, or her life force, midomem tzomeya chay dafka, from these three levels of the inanimate, the vegetable, and the animal. That's an important process. That what fell originally from the world of chaos and is now in the form of sparks of holiness in the vegetable food and in the animal food and in the inanimate, like salt. So that has to become part of the person. Lefi sheshoresh haresh pechet nitzutzin, because the source of these 288 sparks, which comes from the world of chaos, hu ma'od ma'aleh, is very exalted. Shelechein naflu lamata biyoter, and since it's so exalted, that's why it fell so far below. Keyadua hamashal, as it's well known, a parable, minafilat hachoma. If a wall collapses, a wall falls down, sha'evin shebarosh hachoma, the brick which was at the top of the wall, nofelet rachok yoter, falls further than the bricks which are in the middle of the wall or lower down the wall. Kamavua enyan bekitfei Arizal, as explained in the writings of Rabbi Isaac Luria. V'nitva'er baruka b'torat ha'chassidut, explained at length in Hasidic teachings, and he's giving a kind of a list of these Hasidic teachings down through the generations, beginning with the Baal Shem Tov, then Rabbeinu Azaken, then Rabbi Shneur Zalman, v'chein medrushei Rabbeinu Nesiyenu shel Acherezeh, and the later leaders of Chabad, ad lechvot kedushat mori v'chomi admor nesidoreinu, till we come to Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, the sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe, and who was the Rebbe just before our Rebbe. So we would see the chain going to our Rebbe as well. So we've got this concept coming from the writings of Rabbi Isaac Luria in the 16th century and coming all the way down through the generations. And so he's talking about this way that there is an interconnection in existence and that one level gives life to another and that level gives life to another and finally the human being eats it. And the fact that we eat it and that energy, that spiritual energy goes into us and we use that energy in our daily life, that is elevating an energy which originally comes from the world of chaos, from this very exalted realm, higher than our own attempts at holiness can usually reach. V'al pizem muvan, and according to this, it's understood, Godel Hamaila Mechnisa Le'eretz Yisrael, the great significance of going into the land of Israel. Kedei La'asok Ba'inyanim Gashmiim, in order to be involved in these material things. Kevan, since Sha'al Yedei Beru Hadvarim Agashmiim, through our sifting and being involved with these physical things, Sheshochsham Me'od Na'aleh, whose root is so exalted, Bo'olam HaTor, in the world of chaos, Shelamaylem Olam HaTikun, above the world of repair, Tikun, Nimshach Or Na'aleh Biyoter, a particularly exalted radiance is revealed. Shehu Inyan Amshachat Etzem Ha'Or D'Tohu, that is bringing about the revelation of the essence of the light of the realm of chaos. So that very exalted realm can be revealed by us being involved with the physical world and doing mitzvot with the physical world and all the different things that we do in the physical world, typified here by going into the land of Israel. And that's what the spy should have wanted to do, to go into the land of Israel and be able to make this process take place. But they didn't want to do that. Now let's see a little bit more about why they didn't want. Omnom, however, kedei sheyumshach or na'lezeh, in order that this great radiance should be revealed, she'az yitachen shemitzad godel ma'alat ha'or, and then when that great radiance is revealed, they were worried that because of the great radiance, yitbatlu mimitziyutam legamrei, they would be dissolved out of existence, and that's what they didn't want. However, hari ze dafka al yedei ze, that's particularly through the fact shemavarim at hadvarim hagashmiim, that one sifts and is involved with and elevates the physical things, shebehem nitlabshu hanitzutzin d'tor, in which were enclosed the sparks of the realm of chaos. Ach al ze ta'anu amraglim v'amru. Now that's what the spies were claiming. They said, lo nuchal, we're not able to do it. Actually, this is the verse before. We should have read it, but we didn't. It's, the spies claim, we won't be able to go into the land, ki chazak hu mimenu, because the people in the land are stronger than us. But there is another way of understanding it, and the sages tell us in the Talmud, al tikri, don't read it as if mimenu means than us. Kiviyachol, it's as if klape maila amru, they're speaking about God. Afilu balabait einu yachol lohotzi kelav misham. Even the owner, this is how Rashi puts it in his commentary on the Chumash, even the owner of the house can't move around his possessions, his vessels. So in other words, it's as if they're saying God won't be strong enough. And that relates to what you were saying, David. God won't be strong enough to help us come into the land. Now, so the normal way of understanding it is that they are blaspheming against God and they're saying God won't be able to help us go into the land. And it's ridiculous that they should say such a thing. After all, God took them out of Egypt and God killed the Egyptians at the Red Sea. So surely it would be easy for them to understand that there will be no problem for God to help them go into the land of Canaan. But here it's being explained in a different way, in a kind of Kabbalistic way. So what does that mean? Because first of all, let's look at this image, literally, of the vessels. The owner of the house will not be able to move his vessels, take out his vessels. The chelov, the vessels, ka'ei ala kelim d'tol. It's talking about the vessels of the realm of chaos. Shenishberu v'naflu anitzotzot lemata, that were broken and the sparks fell below. Ubala bayit, and when it says the owner of the house, that's kaya al bechinat hatikun, that's the realm of tikun, that's the shetzarich levareh, the realm of healing, which has to sift ulahotzi et hanitzotzot, and remove the sparks and elevate them, and that, those are the kelim, the vessels. Uperush, and so when it says ein bala bayit yachol lotzi et kelav, that the house owner can't take out his vessels, hainu, what they're really saying is she'ein biyocholet hatikun, the realm of tikun, the realm of healing, which the realm of repair, which Rabbi Isaac Luria described, and it's the whole basis of our life and our understanding of life, it will not be able levareh et hanitzutzot detoyu, it won't be able to elevate the sparks of chaos. Lefi sha'orot detikun, because the radiance of repair, of tikun, hey mu'atin, they are few, v'lachein hem chalashim, and they're also weak. Ve'ilu ha'orot detoyu, where is the radiance of chaos, hey merubim, are very many, and they're very strong. So in other words, they were challenging the whole Lurianic narrative about the nature of what the challenge of existence is. According to Rabbi Isaac Luria, there's the breaking of the vessels, and there's this immense radiance which is somehow hidden in the practical world, and we are now part of the attempt at tikkun, at repair. And we face these challenges in the practical world. And that's why the practical world has such immense challenges. Because it's got enormous radiance in it. And very often that radiance is a forbidden radiance. But it's extremely seductive and attractive. And it draws us into it. And what we have to do is stand firm and utilize those bits of the practical world which are permitted. And to use them in a way which elevates them to the divine. And in that way, there is this process of repair taking place, which ultimately ends up with redemption, when the process of repair is complete. But what the spies were saying is that the whole process doesn't work from the very beginning. We do not have the power to elevate the sparks which are there in the physical world. It's too deep, it's too intense.
A bit presumptuous of them, isn't it?
Well, it's the same way that it's presumptuous of them in the simple story that you can tell of the spies, which every, cheder child learns. The spies went into the land of Israel. They saw that the fruit was very big, and they thought that the people were like giants, and so they said, we'll never be able to conquer them. And they wept, and they made everyone else weep. And as a result, on that night, it became Tisha B'Av later on, and many other sad things happening. So, and they had to wander in the desert for 40 years. So it was a whole bad thing, and you can say that was presumptuous. But here it's moving their presumptuousness onto a more spiritual level. They're presumptuous because they don't think that the whole spiritual interaction is going to be able to work. God's plan, it's another way of querying God's plan. So God's plan is that there should be the problem of the breaking of the vessels and the negativity which is there in the world around us, which includes exile and all the other dimensions of that. And then the plan is that the power of tikkun will transform that into redemption. And what they're saying is that the spirituality of tikkun is too weak. How is it going to master the immense energy of the world of chaos? All right, so now we take it a little bit further in the story. Gimel. Achal zeh nema, but about this it says, Vayayes Kalev et ha'am el Moshe. Kalev, he silenced the people so that to Moshe. Vayoma, and he said, Alona ale, we will go up. Don't worry. Vayarashno ota, we will be able to take possession of the land. Ki yachol nuchal la, we will be able to conquer it. Don't worry. Hainu, and that means, translating it into the imagery of this discourse, sheyucholim levare et hanitzutzot detoyu, we will be able to sift the sparks of the realm of chaos which are embedded in physical reality. Ubahartim adiyukim b'pasuk zeh, and considering the points about this verse. Mao omro, why does he say, v'yaz kelev ata'am el Moshe? Kalev silenced the people to Moshe. At first sight, it should have said Rak Vayas Kalev et Ha'am. It should have just said he silenced the people. We also have to understand what does it mean? We will be able. Since he's already said we will be able to go into the land and take possession, what does the second phrase mean? We will be able to conquer it. He said it already before. Va'inyan b'zeh. Dehinei ha'siba l'chach shebemidot ha'torah hayta shvirat ha'kelim. The reason why in the emotional attributes of chaos there was the breaking of the vessels. Va'ad kedei kach, in so much so sheyesh netinat makom l'ta'anat ha'meraglim, that there could even be the claim of the spies shel ha'achazeh, that after that, after this breaking of the vessels, shuv ein bal habayit yachol lehotzi et kelav, what they were saying, that since there's been the breaking of the vessels, the whole thing's finished. There's no way that the world of repair is going to be able to assert itself and do what has to be done. This is all because the breaking of the vessels came about, as mentioned earlier, that the attribute of chaos, the attributes, had this quality of the ego. And that's the excitement of the emotions, but often shall hitchakshut, in a way of being very excited, v'hitlavut, and flaming, v'rash, and thundering, in a chaotic way. And that's an example of the world of chaos within the person's own life. V'zeo sh'amru ha'meraglim, and that's why, you see, there's this power of emotion, which can carry us away, and very often, you know, as is the theme of a good many works of literature and films and so on, everything is relatively stable in someone's life, and then bang, suddenly some kind of emotional thing switches on in the middle and they're carried away by that, and it has a very destructive force. That doesn't mean that there's no room for emotion, but the emotion needs to be framed in such a way by intellect and other dimensions of the person's personality, so that the emotion is able to operate in a way which is constructive rather than destructive. Yeah. Now, line 28. V'zeo shamru ha'meraglim, and that's what the spies said. Efes ki azam, the people is nothing but very strong. Ki chazaku, they're so powerful. Shuhu inyan, all this strength is tokef hamidot de toyo. This is the strength of the emotions of the world of chaos. V'lachein, and therefore, ha'etza, the advice, kedei levararam, in order to sift out these emotions, hu lifol chalishot hamidot, is to have a certain quality of weakening of the emotion, shiyeh bahem inyan habitul, that there should be a quality of selflessness in the emotion. That's the way to deal with it. That it should have, that our the powerful emotion should also have with it the aspect of selflessness, of bitul. V'zeu v'yahas. And that's why it says, next page, page 10. And that's why he says, v'yahas, he silenced them. Lushon shtika, an expression of silence. V'yadu sh'shtika u'inyan ha'bitul. And silence itself relates to selflessness. Dahainu sh'pa'al chalishut u'bitul hamidot. He was trying to achieve that in the emotions of the people who are arguing around him and saying, we won't be able to go into the land, that those emotions could somehow be have some kind of quality of self-transcendence within them. Because when there's self-transcendence there, and you don't want it so much. It's framed by a wider reality. Then there is a quality of selflessness, and then that is a key for the emotion being something positive and wholesome rather than something potentially destructive. Now, how do we get bitul? All right, that's the $64,000 question. How do we get bitul? The hine inyana bitul, that's line 3. The concept of bitul, of abnegation, of selflessness, naser yedei hamshachat hamochin, comes through a flow from the mind. You see, if the mind has enough power, then when the mind flows into the situation, it gives a framing so that the emotion does not control the person exclusively. O kafi sheroim, and as we see, Shemishu bal mochin yoter, the person who has greater power of mind, azayit palut hamidot, then his excitement and enthusiasm, hibachalishut yoter, is weaker, not in the sense that it's weak, but that it's controllable by him. Ki klalut teva mochin, because the whole nature of the mind, hu bevchinat menucha vehityashvut, is in a way of peace and being settled. That's what the mind is intended to be. The mind is intended to be something where it's settled and it's peaceful. Kumo sava da'atoi satim, as it says, this comment from the Zohar, the old man whose mind is concealed, kachamatav, like good wine, the shakit v'shachich, which is quiet and flows quietly. Shalachein haita shvira, and that's why the breaking of the vessels wasn't in the emotions. It was in the emotions. It was only in the emotions. Rak b'midot, it was only in the emotions, v'lo v'mochin, and not in the mind. V'zeh ma sh'nema, and that's why it says, v'yaz kalev, that kalev, silence them, El Moshe, to Moshe, because Moshe represents the quality of being connected to the mind. Shepu'ulat ha-bitul b'midot, the achieving of selflessness in the emotions, he al-yedei ha-chibur El Moshe, is by being connected to Moshe. And what is Moshe? B'chinat chokhma, wisdom. Shem Ma, the name Ma. Now, this name Ma is a way of spelling out the divine name. I think we've had that before. If you look at line 53 on the left-hand side in the little lines, Kasher Shem Havaya Katuv, when you write the name Yudke Vavke, B'milui, 1 second, that's a different one. When you write it, no, he's not talking about that. Shem Ma is when the name Yudke Vavke is written with the A. Here we are. It's on line 38 on the right hand side at the bottom. Kasher Shem Avai Katu Bemilu Oitiot Aleph. When the name Yudke Vavke is written with the letters Aleph, that means Yud is Yud Vav Dalet, Hey Aleph, Vav Aleph Vav, and Hey Aleph. You add up the numerical value of the whole thing, the gematria is number 45. Now, this number 45 links to Moshe, because there's a verse about Moshe where he says, "V'nachnu ma, what are we that you should complain at us?" So this "what are we" is like, that typifies Moshe, and it relates to this particular way of writing the divine name. So Moshe represents wisdom. And when the person is connected to the wisdom of Moshe, which is inside them as well, you see, there's a Moshe inside each of us. When the person is connected, then sheyesh ba'koach lifol ha-bitul b'midot l'toh, then that quality of wisdom from Moshe has the power to dissolve and neutralize the intense emotions of the world of chaos. So all this we can see in a person, that there is this battle going on of the world of chaos and the world of tikkun, which can be seen as like the struggle between the divine soul and the animal soul. The animal soul is from the world of chaos. The divine soul represents the world of tikkun inside the person. And there's this struggle taking place. And the way through it is chokhmah, is wisdom. This flow of wisdom which enables the person to frame the emotion and have some kind of control of it. Now then it talks about the way, in the next few lines, it talks about the way Kalev is a kind of intermediary between Moshe on the one hand and the other spies on the other, and relating also to the people. So that's what Kalev is trying to do. Kalev is trying to link people to Moshe, to the Moshe within them, so that they would be able to take control of this realm of chaos inside, and that through taking control of that, then one is able to achieve the transformations that are possible. Now let's go on to line 22, which is the last section of the discourse. Va'al yedei zeh, and through this, hinei alo na'aleh v'yarashnu ota. Let us go up, because we will be able to conquer the land. Ki yachol nuchalla, we will be able to. Va'inim b'zeh, and this means, demasha katu v'yarashnu ota. When it says we will be able to take possession of the land, Kai al Yurushat Orot de Tov, will be able to take control of the radiance of the world of chaos. Shezen Asal Yedea Birua Prati, and that takes place through the sifting of everything in detail, but often Shalit Labshut, of being involved in that thing, by us being in a physical world, and involved in the physical world, and involved in this detail of physicality, and that detail of physicality. Then there is able to be a transformation taking place. Ubiru prati zeva, and this sifting takes place, last page, La'acharei hakdamat pu'ulat chalishut klalit. After the beginning jump, as it were, that somehow the world of chaos is no longer in control. There's some kind of transformation taking place, so that the world of chaos is, in a sense, weakened, that it does not have this negative power over the person. Now, the Rebbe compares this to a kind of form of going out of Egypt. That's going out of Egypt, which is like jumping out of the control of the world of chaos. And then there is step by step getting involved with the practical world and being able to transform different aspects of practicality into holiness. And he compares that with the 7 weeks of counting the Omer, which came after going out of Egypt, and which meant going through all the different attributes, as you mentioned before, that each attribute, chesed, has got kindness of kindness, and severity of kindness, and mercy of kindness, all the way through. So that means, that's like, in a sense, going into the land of Israel, being involved with the world, and being involved with every appropriate aspect of the world, and in somehow elevating that. And so that is what we are trying to do. And then we have the question of how to achieve this first step of this confrontation with the world of chaos and being able to stop it. So in line 13, it tells us the inyan is Shachalishut HaKlalit, the general weakening of the power of the world of chaos inside us, Naset Al Yedea Bitush, comes through a kind of a slap. It's like a bang. Kamavur Batanya, as it explains in Tanya, about this week's Sedra. Shekashem Moshe Amar Lahem, Eich Shekatzaf Hashem Alehem, right? The story of the Seder is the spies told the people, we won't be able to go into the land of Israel. The people were very upset and wept. And then and then Moshe said to them, you know what? God is so angry with you. He has said, you're not going to go into the land. You're going to wander here for 40 years in the desert. So then they all become very upset and say, oh, we'll go. We're sorry. We shouldn't have said it. We're going to go now. So the Alter Rebbe, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, asked in Tanya, what's changed? 5 minutes ago, they were saying that that we can't go into the land, we can't conquer it. Now they're told that God is very angry, and therefore they're not going to go into the land. And they're suddenly saying, oh, we're very sorry, we'll go into the land now. So it's as if what's happened, kusheshamu dvarim kashim elu, when they heard this sort of slap from Moshe, nichna v'nishva libam b'kirbam, at that moment, their heart, the animal part, was broken within them. Achzel adain be'ofen makif. But that step of that bang, that slap, which is able to bring the person out of Egypt, so to speak, that's only in a surrounding way. Ochadei shiyeh be'ofen p'nimi, in order it should be in a more internal way. Harizeh al yedei itbonenut pratit. That comes about through contemplation, going into detail after detail. Now, this is actually a way of contemplating. A person can contemplate before prayer, either in a general way, thinking of the general idea of divine spirituality, and I'm going to connect with the divine through the prayer, or it can be in a, that's general, or it can be in a much more detailed way. So here the Rebbe is referring to this idea of hitbonenut pratit, a detailed contemplation, but often shekol prat baseichel, in such a way that every single detail in one's mind mavareh prat bamida, sifts a detail in the realm of emotion. So it's as if the person is a connection of mind and emotion, and there are lots of little bits of mind and lots of little bits of emotion, and it's as if each little bit of mind connects with some aspect of emotion and sifts it out. Till the transformation has taken place through all the emotions, which is, so to speak, that we're settled in the land of Israel and we're doing all the different things in the land of Israel, and what is happening is that we're revealing godliness, and it's not a revelation of godliness which makes us dissolve out of our minds or become materialistic. It's something which is balanced and which is in the right way, and that is the attempt that we have in our daily life. And so I think what we've studied is something which is about processes which can take place in our daily life, where we are confronted by these different forces inside us, and Be'ezras Hashem we should be able to enter our own land of Israel, and through that enter the general land of Israel, meaning not just living there in a state of tension, as we are at this moment, but in a wonderful way as a center for the Jewish people and the world of holiness and peace. Amen.